Fairfax, Virginia, interviewing Mr. Saul Herner on July 16, 1997. Mr. Herner, I have that you were born in Brooklyn, New York, January
29, 1923. That's correct.
But don't have much information about family background. Tell me about your parents and early growing up.
Well, I spent the first 8 years of my life in Brooklyn, and then we moved to Queens, which is on Long Island. And I spent my parents were there until 1973 when they both died. And I worked in New York from 1942. During World War II, I was a civilian technician with the Army Air Force.
Okay. Let's go back first and talk about your degree from the University of Wisconsin. How'd you get to Madison? That's my alumnus place also.
Is it? And,
I have that you have a B.S. in agriculture or biochemistry. I couldn't get straight which one.
The biochemistry department at that time
was
in the Department of Agriculture, School of Agriculture.
Well, how did you get to...
I was a pre-veterinary student, I thought. Was my intent.
Uh-huh. So you went from New York to University of Wisconsin?
Yes. Uh-huh. And I decided after a couple of years that I don't want to be a veterinarian. Hmm. And I switched to the biochemistry department, agricultural chemistry department, mm-hmm. technically. Mm-hmm. And ended up there. Sort of a complex story. When the war ended, and I was at various Air Force Institute, it was the Army Air Corps at the time. Mm-hmm. I was at various installations, including Truax Field in Madison, mm-hmm. and Barksdale Field in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Now, when did you join the Army Air Corps?
I was a civilian technician.
Uh-huh. You joined just as soon as you got your degree?
That's right. Uh-huh. As a matter of fact, before.
Oh, before. Okay. Oh, that's right, because your degree is not till 45.
That's right. I was I was at Truax Field. I was still going to school.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the war, the appointment was for duration plus 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to remember the exact, around 1945, I came back to New York temporarily.
And some place along here, oh, let me just test this and make sure we're picking up. Now, some place around here, you've got your BLS in library science from
that's
Madison?
That's a complex story. I came back to get that.
Oh, okay. So you got your degree in biochemistry in 45.
Right.
And then went back to New York?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And?
I was looking for, I was trying to decide what I was going to do. And it's a funny story, sort of like Mel Day.
Yeah.
War story, post-war story.
Yeah, let's go ahead, let's tell it.
Well, I was walking down 42nd Street, and I came across a sign at the New York Public Library, which is at 5th Avenue and 42nd Street. Mm-hmm. At the 42nd Street entrance, was a sign that says that they were looking for scientific people with majors or degrees in science, any kind of science. So I walked in to see what this is about. Mm. And they interviewed me, and they hired me really quick as a chemical reference librarian.
Yeah.
And I was in the science and technology division.
Mm.
And
now you'd already been discharged from the military at this point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was the end of my 6 months.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, it was before the end of the 6 months, but they let me. I should say, I don't know if they let me out or threw me out.
Yeah.
They didn't need me anymore.
Huh.
So I went to work, and I went to work there. And boy, this is interesting stuff, you know.
Where did they put you? In the main?
In the science and in the main.
In the main one building.
In the science and technology division.
Uh-huh.
Which was very interesting. It's a huge collection.
Yeah.
And I had never seen anything like that. And spend all my time in the stacks just walking around. I couldn't get over it. And the rest of the time I would answer or try to answer chemical reference questions. They just gave me chemistry. And they also had the New York Public Library reference. That big building is really run by the Astor Children Lennox Foundation. It's mm-hmm. private. It's not publicly supported. And so they also took on clients, industrial clients, so we'd get all kinds of fancy reference questions from the Borden's company, occasionally a chemical company,
mm-hmm.
And I used to try to field those as best I could using my chemistry, not my biochemistry. And I did that for about a year, and then I thought, gee, you know, that'd be it'd be interesting to go back to the library school. I had had a passing acquaintance with it.
Oh, while you were in Madison before?
Yeah.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, I had ordered a few courses.
Oh, huh.
Out of curiosity.
Yeah. Huh.
It was mainly curiosity. I thought these people were very peculiar. And I took courses in cataloging and stuff like that.
This is while you were there in 45, now before you came back.
Yeah.
This is a strange thing for a biochemistry major to do.
I don't know. I just... I really can't tell you why I was interested.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was more interested in creative writing, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah.
And I was taking side courses in creative writing. And I was doing freelance writing in science.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to make about $100 a month publishing articles and I don't know if you, I guess you don't remember. Pageant magazine, Coronet, bunch of little magazines.
Yeah. Now, you were doing this before you got your degree in 45, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And while I was at the New York Public Library.
And why, and while you were there, okay.
I remember sitting at the stacks typing articles. Everybody wondering, what is he doing?
Yeah. Huh.
And,
were these published under your name?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Crazy article that I had. There was one on Palladium, which was a antimalarial drug. And I just I can't remember where I I must have seen it in a medical journal at the library or somewhere, or a library, and it was right after the war. There was quite a scourge among the returning veterans of malaria,
mm-hmm.
and this stuff, which I guess is still used, strange to say, apparently was quite effective in checking it in some way or other.
Mm.
So I wrote it up, and I remember it appeared in Pageant Magazine.
Pageant Magazine, huh?
And it was called Pagadream -- Death to Malaria. And then I had another one on the stalk of the tomato plant that was had an antifungal effect. And in the tomato plant, they were trying to prevent tomato rot.
Mm-hmm.
And they discovered that this material also could be used on human fungi. And that came out entitled Tomato Juice and Athlete's Foot. And that's what I used to do.
Yeah, so you were doing this on the side while you were that near New York Public.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about going back to the library school at Wisconsin. What was that like?
That was mainly nerve, because at that time in Wisconsin, if you think you can take a final exam in anything, I don't know if this is still true. And I was getting kind of heady, so I was taking some correspondence courses and taking exams. And if I thought I was a master, I had masters, said that I would go for the final exam.
Mm.
And you take what you get. If you get an F in the exam, you get an F.
Mm-hmm.
If you get an A, you get an A. And
you were taking the correspondence courses in New York from UW.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I was working around the clock, but I was having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's how I eked my way through.
Mm. Did you do strictly through correspondence, or did you actually go back to Madison?
I was in Madison for about 6 months.
About 6 months. Uh-huh.
And then I decided I don't need that. I can go this peculiar route.
Now you got the BLS though, right?
Well, it was at that time. Yeah. Well, they didn't call it a BLS. I guess what did they call it? They give you a certificate. We went through stages. At the time I was taking it, you had a certificate, and then they gave it the equivalent of a BS, and then it was elevated too. This isn't like with law, where they give everybody an LLD now.
Right, right.
And at that time, a certificate to a BS, to a... I guess it's an MLS nowadays.
Right. Do you remember any of the faculty that were there at the time?
I only remember two people. A Rachel Schenk.
Uh-huh.
S-C-H-E-N-K.
Uh-huh.
And an Henry Allez, A-L-L-E-Z, who was the dean.
Oh, yeah. Well, Rachel Schenk was one of the Wisconsin institutions. And very famous and referenced.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe cataloging, too. I can't remember.
I think cataloging.
And was it cataloging? Maybe that's what it is. Yeah.
we sort of finish that year sort of I was sort of down on cataloging because I felt all these people do is transcribe tracings from the bottom of the car to the top of the car and take great pride.
Yeah.
Sometimes you type it in red and sometimes you type it in black and so forth. I was sort of intrigued by the whole business of what Henriette Avram was doing at the Library of Congress, you know, Mark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is much later now.
Yeah, well, she sort of rationalized the whole thing. What she did is she computerized what these people were doing imperfectly. She perfected it.
Yeah.
And I always congratulated her on it. She didn't realize what she had done because she hadn't sat and watched these people cataloging.
Yeah. Then you went back to New York Public after your 6 months in Madison and continued.
Oh, no, as a matter of fact, I didn't go back to New York Public.
Oh, you didn't?
I came back and I was feeling very assertive and confident, and I still wasn't sure what I wanted to do, so I... The Special Library Association at the time, maybe they still have, had a unemployment bureau. So I wanted to see what career opportunities there are. And they got me a job as the engineering and science librarian at NYU, New York University, in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed there for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
And this got you into the Special Libraries world. When did you join SLA?
Just at that time.
At that time, okay.
And then I stayed there for a couple of years.
How large was the staff that you supervised there? Do you remember?
Oh, about three.
Uh-huh. And this was in the Bronx?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I was going from Queens to the Bronx.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
About 2 hours each way.
Oh.
And then I, using the same route, like filming through SLA, I got a job as a chief librarian of the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory. And stayed there for, what was it, 2 years or 3 years?
I have, you came in 50 to Johns Hopkins.
You left in 53.
And left in 53,
right.
Well, was it 53? I don't actually...
I think it was 53.
I don't remember exactly. Well, tell me about what it was like at Johns Hopkins. Now, how large was the staff you were supervising there?
Over there I had about 8 people.
Uh-huh.
And, I also discovered a new form of literature, which I was vaguely acquainted with, because when I was at NYU, they were just declassifying the atomic energy reports
mm-hmm.
from World War II, and I guess captured German and Japanese documents. And so, and one of the things we were doing at NYU was trying to organize these things and try to disseminate them, audio, what are we going to do with them?
Mm-hmm.
And at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory. They were among big producers of these reports and users. They used them much more than conventional books and journals and so forth. And it took me a while to cotton on to all the scientists. They didn't know or care much about journals or books or anything. And I was wondering, why don't they use the conventional library? And what do they use to get information? And this led me to do a bunch of interview studies over there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I discovered, gee, these guys use these reports. So that did two things. One, acquainted me with the significance of these reports, and the fact that they have to be organized, and in fact are being organized by some libraries. And various things were happening at the same time. They had at that time the Armed Services Technical Information
Center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were organizing. And in other words, in ignorance, I did this study, and the scientists educated me in how to use and what these things are and how to use them and how they find them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they also had a research arm at the Applied Physics Lab, which did basic research at that time. What did they call it? Uncommitted research, I think the term they used.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to, let's say, unapplied.
Mm-hmm.
And I started talking I noticed this diversity, this dichotomy, I should say, when the applied physics, basic scientists, long-haired, were looking for information, and they did it one way. When the applied guys, the report users, they did it quite another way.
Hmm.
And so I started making lists of ways of getting information and trying to relate it to type of activity. Well, because I mean, you know, there must be some relationship between what you do and how you get information.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm trying to remember exactly what. Yeah.
Now, was your first article on user studies in 54? Is that?
Yeah.
And so it was, what intrigued you was when you came to Johns Hopkins, you saw that those scientists were not using the regular journal and book literature. Instead, they were really interested in this technical report literature.
Well, as a matter of fact, there's another anecdote. I attended, while I was at Johns Hopkins, a meeting, and I was just curious. It was announced in Science, in the journal Science, and I was just curious, and it was called Operation Crossroads, this meeting.
Uh-huh.
It was in Philadelphia, and I went to this meeting.
Now, who was sponsoring this?
Could have been the American National Academy of Sciences, I think.
Was it? Okay.
I remember Detlef Braun, who was the director
Who was?
Detlev Brunk, his name was. He was the head of the Academy at the time. Huh. And the National Research Council and so forth.
Uh-huh. And this was in what year? And
that was in 1951.
51. Okay, I think I have a notice of that from some of your writings about that. But I don't see it right at the moment.
I mentioned it in something I wrote for the in ACES.
Uh-huh. Right.
No, in the ACES bulletin.
Right. I think so. And well,
the thing is that Jim Perry was one of the speakers, and he was saying here's how scientists get information, and that sort of stirred my curiosity. As a matter of fact, my my animosity a little bit. One reason that Eugene Garfield and I became friends is because both of us can't keep our mouths shut. And I raised my hand and I said to Perry, he has one of the main tools, and I'm asking him, have you done an empirical study of some kind to determine what tools scientists actually use? And he had just, I guess he had written his book on punch cards.
Well, it came out in 51.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And he claimed that they took these pads, and I saw these other guys, these purports users.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, gee, well, it can't be all there. Chemists among these reports users. So it can't be all that way. And that sort of embarked me on that study.
Now, what did Perry say when you asked him this question?
He sputtered, as a matter of fact. And then I remember a guy sitting next to me in the audience saying, you have a heart.
Well, now, when you did your 54 article,
yeah,
on user studies, had you read the Bernal study at that point?
Oh, sure. That's one of my citations.
Yeah, okay. So you knew about that. When?
Well, that was another kind of issue. And this was based on technique. He was using diary methods.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, gee, we're talk about biases, you talk about the Heisenberg uncertainty, which is almost a spotlight effect. If you have a guy living with himself and recording, as opposed to having a large sample and hitting him with a sort of critical incident,
mm-hmm,
ask him to think of the last time or the last two times you went to get information, and what did you do? And then double check to see, give him a list. First ask him what he did, anecdotal sort of, or critical incident. And then double check by asking to see if he contradicts himself and so on. It was amateurish on the one hand, but yeah, are you okay?
Let me just, we'll change the tape because my light's